Dan Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. Dangerous cold.
This is extremely difficult, if not outright unbearable weather for the majority of the country. There's wind chill alerts in effect this morning from North Dakota all the way to Florida, not to mention all the snow that's piling up and the very dangerous ice on a lot of our roads and highways.
ABC's Trevor Ault. The ABC News Republican debate in New Hampshire has been canceled. Ron DeSantis would have been the only one on the stage. Nikki Haley said she'd only debate former President Trump, and he wasn't expected to show. Trump back from New Hampshire to New York in a courtroom to hear how much more he'll have to pay in damages for defaming writer E. Jean Carroll. The Supreme Court today to hear one of the year's biggest cases. It will consider whether to overturn a key precedent that gives broad power to federal agencies. The FAA says Boeing has completed inspections on 40 of its 737 MAX 9 planes, and the agency will now thoroughly review data from those tests. It's the same model plane that had a door plug blow off mid-flight. This is ABC News.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Republicans are defending their decision to fire Public Service Commissioner Tyler Huebner yesterday. Republicans have fired eight of Governor Evers' appointees since fall, but Senator Julian Bradley says it's not political.
We have confirmed over 480 of the governor's appointments. If this were purely political, I suspect those numbers would be significantly lower.
Evers quickly appointed Christy Nieto to take Huebner's place. A Democratic law firm in Washington, D.C. is asking the Wisconsin Supreme Court to reconsider the state's congressional map. The Elias Law Group says the court's landmark ruling on the Wisconsin legislature's maps last month calls into question Wisconsin's U.S. House districts. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now, here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Marshfield Clinic Health System officials have announced that the organization will be suspending the jobs of 3% of its workforce. The move comes in the wake of a merger with Ascensia Health falling through. In a statement, Marshfield Clinic announced most of the furloughs will be for non-patient-seeking departments, including leadership roles. The organization also made cuts in November, including decreasing pay for executives and suspending its 401k match program for all employees. About 360 people will be furloughed. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is reminding residents that they are now accepting applications for the Emerging Contaminants for Smaller Disadvantaged Communities grant program. The grants are reserved for non-municipal community public water systems that serve at least 25 year-round residents. The funding will be used to help the owners of those public water systems address concerns regarding PFAS and manganese contamination and reduce that contamination to the proposed EPA standards. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
The Badgers lose on the road. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers fall to the Nittany Lions at Penn State. Matt LePay.
With 0.4 seconds left, they'll get it in to Baldwin. It's over. Penn State, a four-point winner here at the Bryce Jordan Center as the students make their way onto the floor here in State College.
The final 87-83, the Badgers got into foul trouble early. Head coach Greg Gard.
Four times we fouled jump shooters, and we hadn't done that in a while. I thought we had kind of moved past that.
So now the Badgers are 13-4. They host Indiana Friday night. NFL, the Packers installing the game plan for Saturday night's game against the 49ers. Sometimes teams go a day early when playing games on the West Coast, but Matt LaFleur declined.
It's something we talked about, but we figured it'd be best to stay in our normal routine. It's a short week anyways, has its own set of challenges, and just felt like it was best for us to stay in as normal as a routine as possible.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Partly to mostly cloudy today. We'll get to around 9 for a high this afternoon. It's still cold. The wind chill will be well below zero here for a good chunk of the day today. Tonight down to 4 below. Tomorrow a little sun early, then cloudy. High of 9 above. Some light snow is possible tomorrow night. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Currently it's 3 above.
What a win! The Green Bay Packers now face the San Francisco 49ers this Saturday night in California. Catch every play and score on the Packers Radio Network, locally in Racine, on WRJN 1400 AM, 99.9 FM, and 98.1 FM in Kenosha. 98Q Country in Park Falls and in Richland Center on WRCO 100.9 FM. The Packers against the 49ers this Saturday night. Pregame at 5, kickoff 7:15. What a team! The Packers and the Civic Media Radio Network.
Did you know this local radio station is part of Civic Media? Learn more about the entire network at civicmedia.us. From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
All right, welcome back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Your calls are welcome. I am joined by three very distinguished scientists, Bryce Nichols, Simon Wayne Hobson, all the way from Paris, France, and Richard H. Ebright. And before we went to break, gentlemen, there was a question, I think, Bryce, that you posed to Richard about Wisconsin and what they stand to gain. I guess you mean, no pun intended. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, I have to acknowledge that is a great pun. I like it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. What they have to lose, not gain, but
yeah, like what it. They have to lose.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's so much that could be said, but the problem for the University of Wisconsin is the following. I can give you lots of arguments why this research will not yield anything tangible. So whenever we discuss what we're doing, we have to say, well, these are the benefits. And when you work on microbes and viruses, there are the odd risk because we work in specialized labs. So there are no risks associated, as Richard has said, with this work. And so basically what's happening is this work is making the world a more dangerous place. I think that's a very simple phrase that your listeners can get hold of. And when they learn that, and they also hear that there are no obvious benefits, they say what, or they can add further words behind that, you know, like WTF. So the question is, what's the danger for you, Wisconsin? You see, if ever there was an accident at U Wisconsin, and a lab worker or technician got infected and walked out the virus, because as you know, when you get symptoms from going in the subway, you were probably infected 2-3 days before. So you walk out and you're feeling great, and then the symptoms develop later. If this started something like this, you can imagine, particularly in a place like the US, that people would be sort of pretty angry about it and would set up a class action suit. Now, when you remember what happened to those two workers who were defamed and disparaged by Rudy Giuliani, who were awarded staggering compensation. But if we now add into that loss of life from maybe just as little as 300-400 people, then this would demolish the University of Wisconsin. I don't think the people in the top brass are aware of the danger. And U Wisconsin isn't just for virology, as all your listeners will know. They know U Wisconsin far better than a guy from Paris. But they know that they teach music, they teach languages, they do physics, metallurgy, chemistry, physical education, you name it. And if that would be lost because of one sort of questionable experiment done by a gentleman at U Wisconsin that Richard doesn't agree with the premises, Bryce not either, and not myself. So it's not an experiment that is not without critique. And therefore they are incredibly exposed to this. And U Wisconsin doesn't have an insurance policy that protects them into the billions. They do not. And therefore, this erroneous work could literally, maybe 5, 10, 15, wipe out you, Wisconsin. Is that what you want?
So
or is it great government, so important? Is it so important that you do that?
So the question has to be, somebody's financing it, and why? And who is it, and why? If it has served no positive purpose.
Come on, you're not 21, okay? Anymore. I wish you were.
I don't know about that.
You know that things happen and silly things happen and people get into things without really thinking about it. And I think maybe the danger of this was not necessarily perceived by the community at the time. But as soon as it became public, and that was, say, as Richard has said, as late 2011 to 2012, what we were amazed was the pushback. Pushback from our colleagues. They didn't want to learn about it. So let's say we got into this. Let's say, the world's not a perfect place. There was an erroneous decision made. That happens. But, we're here to correct errors. And no one has wanted to correct the error. And Richard, Bryce, and myself have been a minority who's saying, there are problems associated with this work. Now, be careful. Stop.
There's real pushback because there's an unwillingness to admit an error was made.
Exactly.
Particularly from the funding agencies, the research funding agencies that approved this work and did so without any form of risk-benefit analysis and without any form of regulatory oversight. The people who made those decisions get called on having made poor decisions. Their approach has been to double down and to say that what they decided was the right thing, that this research is important and needs to proceed. And that pathology among research funding officials, former research funding officials, most notably Anthony Fauci and Francis Collins of the NIH, that has what has driven this activity, expanded this activity, excused each accident from this activity, and places us at risk today. An unwillingness to admit and acknowledge a mistake.
And Earl, as you've pointed out so kindly, I'm from the other side of the Atlantic, and yes, it is much less colder than where you are. But the Europeans have not wanted to discuss this. They've pushed back. They have funded far less gain-of-function work than the US. But they don't want to get involved in it because it's a hot potato in the US and they would like it to go away. Push it under the carpet, push it aside, move on. It is not just US. It'll be unfair to just go for the US. It's the world community that just doesn't want to take criticism and doesn't want to admit that, well, maybe this wasn't a good idea. It is a massive black hole somewhere. And I'm sure psychologists can analyze this far better than we three, but it is a prevalent problem all over the place.
So Bryce, you guys are like the lone wolves. You are sounding the alarm.
Maybe the Lone Rangers, because I remember looking at the Lone Ranger when I was a kid. We're Lone Rangers.
And so Bryce, then explain to us in the audience. If they see something positive in this development and there clearly are more yays than nays on it, what are we missing?
Well, I guess to that point, the positives are explained. I don't want to speak for everybody, but we would welcome people with opposing views to have an open discussion about it. I noted when I spoke on last Wednesday that nobody from Wisconsin spoke and the researcher Kawaoka chose to not show up. I mean, my colleague and I went 1,000 miles there to speak, and Kawaoka can't be bothered to walk across the street. I think that, and that's really, again, going back to my first point, the scientists are just, I've been very disappointed with overall the scientific community for just burying their head and not wanting to engage on this, because the public, which is why we need to mobilize the public, saying us,
right,
I am coming on here, and when I speak to legislators, I say, please, 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 we need regulation on us. I know that you love science and you want science. Society needs science, but science needs to work on for the benefit of society without harming society. That's a basic fundamental thing that we should all agree on. But we've sort of, I guess, what is the expression? We sort of jumped the shark. I don't know if right. That's appropriate.
Yes.
But we, for some reason right now, the scientific community is sort of in lockstep, with the exception of a handful of people that are saying that this research is valuable without any historical demonstration of its value. And I guess I would also say, Earl, that one of the reasons why we can, the Lone Ranger thing or whatever, I mean, the beautiful thing about academic tenure is we can do this. That's really what I think is such a privilege about, like, the ability to come and take some position that leads people to sort of be upset with us. Because we have, we have the ability to do, go out and take controversial positions, although this is not one that should be. But I don't know, until they come on and justify this to you, I'm not sure. I don't want to speak for them why they believe that this is valuable. So we would all welcome that debate.
So I'm clearly going to be reaching out to the other side, but I want to also ask, as you gentlemen, is if at the end of this kind of research, there's a pot of gold. Because in many instances, people can look, and I see Richard saying no, because...
Well, you mean money. Earl, you mean money, right?
Yes.
You mean money for, yeah, well, that's...
for vaccinations and all these, not in this instance, because people thought that when it came to COVID, that the vaccination and finding that in the pot of gold that was at the end of the vaccinations.
Well, this is where you've got to have a bit of a problem. You see, at that time, they said this work would help us predict the next pandemic, which, of course, it would be terrific if we could. And then it would help us make vaccines drugs. None of those three claims have been substantiated. The sad thing is that many of my colleagues will admit in private that that's the case, but they will not go on the record because they're afraid of the establishment. You see, it's this classical... basically, you can see us and you can see our Asia, but we're the whistleblowers.
Right.
It's the whistleblowers against the establishment. It's a classic case of it's nothing new. And they don't want to break ranks. But in private, they will say, of course, you're right, Simon. But they won't say it in public, which is sad, because if scientists don't tell the truth, then I always keep saying, how can we make this thing, an iPhone or a smartphone? If it's not with hardware, this works, this doesn't work. Yes, no, you can't say, well, I think it works, or this might work. You can't make a smartphone with things like, well, maybe it's not true, but I'm not going to say so in public, but in private, it's rubbish. It has to be clear, yes, no, that's how science ultimately works. It's as Richard said, it's the fear of opprobrium because it's been set up this way. Let's get into the answers. We have to find solutions. So, and that's why we're so pleased to continue.
So, Bryce, when we return from this short hiatus, I'll let you take the conversation where you wanted to go with Simon and Richard for the duration of the show. In between calls that we'll take from the audience. 844-967-2789. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. Don't touch that dial.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
If you're looking forward to getting out on the bay or lake to ice fish or snowmobile, colder temperatures are here, but consider this.
Well, in a normal winter, starting sometimes Thanksgiving, ice starts to form. This year, we are a full 5-6 weeks behind our ice making.
That's Tom Derzwicki from Bayside Ice and Recovery in Suamico. He's been rescuing people and their trucks after falling through thin ice for more than 20 years.
The snow and the slush will cover up some bad spots. If you're on a pressure crack and you see snow and slush, you know, that crack, it appears to be maybe a foot 2 feet wide, but on each side of that crack, you could have 10, 15 feet of bad ice on each side of that crack.
DNR officials say check with locals who know the conditions, but also know ice safety is never 100%.
Mother Nature doesn't care. If you're falling through, you're falling through.
300,000 people ice fish in Wisconsin. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
All right. Welcome back to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I'm joined by three very distinguished scientists and professors, Bryce Nichols, Simon Wayne Hobson, and Richard H. Ebright, and they're here to talk about gain of function, and we'll get into all those things as we continue this discussion. We'll go right to the phone lines. We need you guys to be brief. Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. Your thoughts?
Good morning. First off, we the people ultimately are the government. We must never forget that. The question I have for the scientists are, and it's really, really difficult, is that you have some huckster that can come along and say this is the cure-all and, you know, be-all and end-all, and it's clear and it's going to cure you, and people pay money for it because they think it's going to work, when scientist is more about the scientific theory. And there's lots of other things that go on with the hypothesis, and there's never really a definitive answer when it comes to science. How is it that we, the people, how is it that the public is supposed to know who to trust? Like you said, trust has been broken, but how does trust come back? And how do we, you know, keep trust going? That's the part I don't understand, because the huckster can run off with your money.
Hey, Tom, thank you for the question. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to start that one because it's fundamentally the key question here. And one of the reasons that, in fact, a major reason why I sort of got into this space, I would say that Richard and Simon have been, you know, doing this for decades, talking about this issue. I'm very new to the issue. But this is, Tom asked that question? Is it Tom?
Yes.
That's the great question. I honestly, in the chat earlier, I don't know. I honestly don't know. I think it's a fight. Excuse me. It's something we constantly have to work towards to develop trust between the public and scientists. And the problem too is that we're talking also, we're researchers. We're not public health officials. So you also have public health officials that are messaging to the public, whereas we're more basic researchers. So we're not a monolith of expertise. And honestly, like, the key thing is to have open discussions. So one of the things that Biosafety Now does is we have these Twitter spaces where anybody from the public can come on and talk to us. That's kind of what I think is the only way we can establish some return to trust. Honestly, until you look people in the eye and they trust you. I mean, how do you trust people if you've been lied to? You shouldn't. So I don't know. That's the key question. We do need to restore trust in science. It's really the scientists themselves, I say, that need to be doing a better job of acting with integrity and honesty. So I don't know. Simon and Richard certainly have opinions on this.
I can speak from my days were working with HIV, arrogance in the beginning, opening up and just confronting the questions. And when people are open and ready to take questions or ready to face a TV crew or reporter, people quickly sort of say, well, you know, he's ready to argue his case or she's ready to argue a case. This already takes a lot of the angst and the unknowns out of it. But when you just see, you say, leave us, we know what we're doing. This is the worst possible. As I said earlier, we don't have to do it in every single aspect of virology because we would get lost. But there are times on this, like the origins of HIV, the origins of COVID, this Ebola. The gain of function. Well, actually, I have no problem with Ebola because it's a natural virus. It was the consensus on that. And therefore, it's our job to work on Ebola. It's a damn dangerous virus. And I have colleagues working on it. And if we didn't, we would have our colleagues and saying, well, why can't you do something? We need a vaccine. We need drugs. You can't just let us. You say, oh, well, it's too dangerous for the microbiologist and leave society exposed. No. But when you make new viruses for humans, you say, why? Why make the world a more dangerous place? And if someone can answer that, then we can say, can we evaluate the risk and the benefits? But no one has come up with an argument to say why this work is going to make the world a better place. For me, it's going to make it more dangerous. And that's why I keep speaking out like Bryce and Richard.
Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Good morning to you, Cindy. Be brief.
Good morning. You said that they created a swine flu in the laboratories. Why would they do that? I don't understand why they create something that could be potentially exposed to everybody and be so lethal.
Great question, Cindy. Thank you.
Richard, do you want to do that one? I think it's crazy.
Well, I was specifically describing a bird flu. Avian influenza H5N1 that had been engineered to now transmit efficiently mammal to mammal by a respiratory aerosol route. Why would someone do that? This is a question I think Earl has asked also. It comes down to the incentive structures for researchers. There are three reasons. Gain of function research is easy for scientists. It requires no new hypotheses, no original thought, no sophisticated methods, and no sophisticated equipment. It's technically easy. Second, gain of function research is easily fundable. The research funding agencies in the United States, under particularly Fauci and Collins at NIH, prioritized this category of research and expanded funding for it. Major incentive for a researcher. Third, it's easily publishable. Particularly the more transgressive the experiment, the more transgressive, the more dangerous, the more that it would make a viewer like Cindy saying, why do they do it? The easier it is to publish and the more noteworthy it is and the more public attention it brings. You put those three incentives together, easy experiments, easy fundability, and easy publishability. And for an ethically challenged researcher, that is a decisive incentive. And it then makes researchers choose to do this work, even though they know this work will not contribute to, has never contributed to, and never will contribute to the development of a new vaccine or drug, and is existentially risky.
You know, gentlemen, Tom called, and he always prefaces his comments that we the people are the government. Well, so when we hear these things, it's as if this is out of our control as the citizenry.
That's why the bill is important.
Go ahead.
That's the federal government, as you know, is at an impasse, partisan impasse. It can accomplish nothing. As a result of that, efforts to improve oversight, to strengthen biosafety, biosecurity, and biorisk management at the federal level have stalled. It needs to be done at the state. That's where your listeners can help.
Guys, got to take a short hiatus. Our phone lines are open. As always, at 844-967-2789, you can ask the questions, but be brief. I am joined by three very distinguished professors, Bryce Nichols, Simon Wayne Hobson, and Richard H. Ebright. You're tuned into a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show.
With with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Wisconsin Republicans appear to have hit an impasse over legalizing medical marijuana. Senate Majority Leader Devin Lemahue says creating state-run dispensaries is a non-starter. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he won't compromise to address Senate Republicans' concerns. About 15% of Wisconsin's children are obese. State lawmakers are introducing five bills to help kids get in shape. One of them would give eligible families incentive to buy fresh fruit and vegetables.
Families participating in SNAP can purchase additional fruits and vegetables from participating farmers markets, community-supported agriculture programs, grocery stores, and other healthy food retailers.
Representative Alex Joers is a member of the Speaker's Childhood Obesity Task Force. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly. Country music fans will be happy to learn that music legend Willie Nelson is planning to play in Duluth this year. According to a Northern News Now report, Nelson is scheduled to play at Duluth's Bayfront Festival Park on May 23rd. The 90-year-old Nelson has continued to release new music 7 decades into his career and will be inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in November. He was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1993. Tickets are slated to go on sale at 10 a.m. on January 19th. The Wisconsin Department of Administration has announced that applications for the Transit Capital Assistance Grant Program are now being accepted. The funds will come from a $2.9 billion settlement against Volkswagen for violating the Federal Clean Air Act. Wisconsin was allocated $67.1 million of the total settlement. The funds are meant to help municipalities pay for the replacement of public transit buses to work towards the state's clean energy goals. Applications must be submitted by March 8, 2024. And that's what you need to know. For WLAK News, I'm James Kelly.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
The Badgers lose on the road. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Wisconsin Badgers fall to the Nittany Lions at Penn State. Matt LePay.
With 0.4 seconds left, they'll get it into Baldwin. It's over. Penn State, a four-point winner here at the Bryce Jordan Center as the students make their way onto the floor here in State College.
The final 87-83, the Badgers got into foul trouble early. Head coach Greg Gard.
Four times we fouled jump shooters, and we hadn't done that in a while. I thought we had kind of moved past that.
So now the Badgers are 13-4. They host Indiana Friday night. NFL, the Packers installing the game plan for Saturday night's game against the 49ers. Sometimes teams go a day early when playing games on the West Coast, but Matt LaFleur declined.
It's something we talked about, but we figured it'd be best to stay in our normal routine. It's a short week anyways, has its own set of challenges, and just felt like it was best for us to stay in as normal as a routine as possible.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. The worst of the cold is over, and now wind chills will climb to feeling like near zero. With more clouds building in today, it's acting as a blanket, keeping us warmer. This means by tomorrow, we'll feel our actual temperatures. But still, it's sweater weather, and we don't thaw out until next week. Right now, it's 3 degrees.
Hey, son. How are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it. Navigating without a compass, eyes waiting, started to wonder, metamorphosis, philosophy you thought you is.
When your kid can't find the language, help them find the lyrics. Listen to the Sound It Out album and get tips and tools to start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. I'm joined by three very distinguished professors and scientists, Bryce Nichols, Simon Wayne Hobson, and Richard H. Ebright. And now we're talking about gain of function. And before I kind of turn it over to you, Bryce, there's a question, the more general answer, it's a way to study how the virus works in general, ergo inserting a furin cleavage site lets you see if furin cleavage sites increases infectivity. It's a basic research as opposed to directly medically relevant research. I'll bet as Ebright said, an easy but risky way of doing it. You want to respond?
Issue here, which is that scientists that are studying these pathogens will claim that these are important for developing vaccines and therapeutics, but then also claim that they are, which they're not, but then they'll also say, well, we can learn very basic questions about the biology of these dangerous pathogens. But what is learned is not worth placing humanity at existential risk. It's as simple as that. The experiments themselves, whatever benefit comes from them from a basic science standpoint is vastly outweighed by even the slightest chance of having another pandemic that kills millions. There's just no question. So when
in every other area of human endeavor, we weigh risk and benefit, and we proceed only when the risks are perceived to be outweighed by the benefits. This is the exception. And I have to emphasize a very important point for your listeners. This category of research is a very small part of biomedical research. It's less than 0.01% of the U.S. biomedical research enterprise. It's even less than 1% of virology research. Only a small number of labs, perhaps a dozen to two dozen to three dozen worldwide, perform this category of research. So it's a very small part of research. It's a part of research that has no civilian applications, and it's a part of research that has existential risk of causing extinction of the human species. And the risk-benefit ratio is always adverse, always focused toward risk. It's a very simple matter. If we were compelled to evaluate risk and benefit before funding and carrying out this research never, ever would be undertaken.
So for people who may not understand the pathogens, I'm one of them, but when you're in hospitals and you spend an inordinate amount of time in the hospital and they're always wearing gloves and they're always spraying things down, it's because of what is developing there or what could possibly develop around a bunch of sick people. Is it safe to say that part of research, scientific research, is earmarked towards that, and we always need to have
most biomedical research focuses precisely on those illnesses that humans get. This category of research, this special category, gain-of-function research, focuses on pathogens that do not exist and that likely never would exist unless they are created in a lab. That's the key difference. When you go to the hospital, there are infectious diseases that you can contract in the hospital. There are infectious diseases you can bring to the hospital,
right,
and contract in the community. Research on those is essential. And that's the overwhelming majority of biomedical research in the U.S., the overwhelming majority of virology. But there's this tiny fraction, 0.01% of biomedical research in the U.S., 1% of virology, that instead focuses on diseases that don't circulate in nature, that don't circulate in humans, and creates new pathogens, new threats that otherwise would not exist.
So we've got I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, sorry, I could love to take this on, because you see, there's also regulations. Now, my son is a heart surgeon. My wife is a children's doctor. And they've taken this Hippocratic oath, which is you just don't do harm, right? They have to do it. They take it very early on in their careers. Now, Bryce, Richard, and myself, if we wanted to, because we have our scientific, we could develop a pretty nasty virus. But we wouldn't, because ethically, we don't think it's we should do it. But no one has asked us to take the equivalent of that oath, like my son and my wife, and say, at least boys, don't do any harm. That's a very, very low bar in society, that what I do mustn't hurt anybody. And, you know, anyone can sort of, sure, I'll take that. I'll sign that. I'll do that. Easy. And yet we're not to do it. Yet we could make a virus that could infect millions. And who knows how many it would kill. And no one comes along and steps along and sort of says, oh, yes, well, we should perhaps correct that. And therefore, people see that this is, funnily enough, causing human illness. It doesn't seem to bother too many people in this rarefied area. It's absolutely staggering. I can understand why your listeners don't get it. I mean, it doesn't make any sense, and it doesn't make any sense to us three.
Bryce?
Yeah, and I think it speaks to just sort of a general cultural issue in STEM, and in particular, as you said, Simon, there's really not, you know, as someone that was sort of trained in biomedical research, it wasn't actually something that we ever discussed, the impacts of what we do to the environment and to society. And in fact, it's sort of always, we're sort of always discussed as if we're saving, you know, we're these, whatever, like scientists are saving humanity. I believe that a lot of the researchers doing this work do see themselves as the saviors of humanity, which is the only thing that I would think. I mean, they discuss it that way. They talk about their work as essential for preventing, you know, future pandemics. We certainly want there to be research on pandemics that emerge naturally, but we also want there to be a focus on preventing any possibility of a pandemic emerging from a lab. And we just simply don't see, and like Simon said, it makes, like, I cannot understand the mindset of people that want to do these experiments. And in fact, argue that they are for humanity's good and will stand up and tell the public that without any opposition. So it doesn't make sense. And that's actually the question that we get asked the most, like, well, there must be some reason to do this.
Can I give you another example? And it's Wisconsin-based example. The thing with the controversy erupted by people wanting to know whether this bird virus could move over into humans. So you can say that's a legit question. The way we answer it, we have difficulties. Richard and I and Bryce have difficulty with the answers that they threw up. But you can see the curiosity. Now, Dr. Karuk in Wisconsin took two human flu viruses. When the bird aspect is all gone, he took two flu viruses that are known to cause pandemics, and he mutated these things. So he made variants of this virus that would totally escape any immune system response that you have got in your body, any what we call antibodies or what we call killer cells. Those two things are crucial in controlling. You've got them to the flu virus that you had last year, or maybe you had it a few weeks ago. And he made sure, deliberately, it was intent. It wasn't a side effect. It was intent. The design was to do this. He made a virus that would escape every single thing that your body has made to control those two huge flu viruses since they, in the last 5 years where you've been in the world and you've been coming up around. And the answer is, why? Oh, I wanted to know if it was possible.
He did it because he could.
Because he wanted to make a splash. Would it help science? Would it help anyone in the human health secretary? Would it help any professional epidemiologist, any health minister in the world, in China, Indonesia, Uruguay, Australia, or the US? No. And yet that work is being published, and it was done in the equivalent of a dental practice lab.
So he did it for fame.
It wasn't done in a high containment lab with these spacesuits. It was done in the equivalent, as Richard said, a good dental practice.
So he did it for fame. Is it safe to say there
yes.
are people who...
Well, wait a minute. Grant money, career advancement.
Yes.
Well, you know, that information is now publicly available, so Kawaoka probably wouldn't do it. But if some nuthead, and you and I are old enough to know how crazy human beings can
right.
be. Not many, but some are really, really, just, they're so wacky, you don't understand how they function. They, you know, and what if they wanted to do it, you know?
They have a full instruction book.
What can I tell you?
His papers give you a recipe, step-by-step recipe how to construct that virus.
That's right. And on top of that, we know that it will taste good. When you do a cookery recipe, you always wonder, will I get the taste that they say I will? But this one, we know because it's been proven.
So is it safe to say at the root of gain of function is in what you guys are proposing is to put shackles or at least some bite into this where people just don't have freedom individually to do whatever it is they want to do
to protect the entire human population at risk.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's what gain of function basically is.
Yes.
No. That's what these people are doing. As Richard said,
right.
this work that they're talking about is a very, very small fraction. The rest of biology and virology is doing damn useful work. This is the equivalent of fringe. It's not mainstream. It's fringe. It's a small. Therefore, if we were to stop it, there would be no loss to combating the next pandemic, a variant of COVID, because we've seen Delta, Omicron. If a new variant springs up, it would not impact that research. It would not impact drug development or vaccine development at all. Your listeners can be assured that that there will be enough people out there to handle, well, not to handle, because we're always up against microbes. And we have to admit that, you know, there's going to be another pandemic, and we just hope that we and our loved ones might scrape through. But given my age, you know, the next pandemic will probably take me out.
But when you say it's fringe, and I've heard Bryce say you guys are the whistleblowers, then there are more people who are agreeing with or remaining silent.
Yes, remaining silent.
Well, Richard was warning about this in 2002. He's actually known as the Cassandra of the of this. So the point is that the guy who made those viruses was given a breakthrough prize, and Wisconsin wanted to keep him, and so they built a $12.5 million facility to keep him. This is they're being rewarded. This is a perverse incentive structure that just needs to end.
So guys, hang on. Fascinating discussion. And before we get away from here, Bryce, I think it's important that we take some time for you to explain to our audience how they can be play a role in making sure that we at least put some shackles on what is taking place. 844-967-2789. Got to take a short hiatus. Don't touch that dial.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
This ad furnished by Nesmatage LLC. Offer not valid in all states or where prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Honey, the credit card bill came, and we're maxed out.
Great. Maxed out cards, rent is due, bills are piling up. We just need some extra cash to help us get by.
We should do what my brother did. He went to 27cash.com and got $3,000.
With our bad credit?
27cash.com is different. They're one of the largest personal loan networks. They can help people with any type of credit get up to $5,000.
I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork.
Nope. My brother said it was fast and easy. He did it right from his phone.
If you have a regular source of income, you can be approved for a loan of up to $5,000 in minutes, and your cash can hit your bank account as soon as the next day. Our lenders have millions of dollars to lend regardless of your credit history.
Great news. I went to 27cash.com and we'll have our money as soon as tomorrow.
Wow, that is fast.
If you need extra cash, go to 27cash.com. That's 27cash.com. 27cash.com.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
All right, welcome back to what has been the fastest 2 hours that I've ever been a part of. And I just want to say, guys, I hope it's the beginning of a continued dialogue and conversation that we can have with you guys about what is clearly a very, very critical discussion that needs to be had between the citizens of this nation and its government. Let's go to Jack Quickly from Racine. Jack Quickly, you say what, sir?
I apologize if you covered this, but I'd like to hear more about the institutions that are responsible for authorizing this type of research, universities, governments worldwide, and what is their responsibility and how are they failing and who are these institutions?
Great question, Jack. Thank you very much. Bryce?
That's a Richard question. Okay. That's definitely his wheelhouse.
Okay, Richard. Yes.
Okay, so at the federal level in the United States, there are regulations with force of law for gain-of-function research on smallpox virus, but there are no regulations with force of law, none, that restrict gain-of-function research or provide oversight of gain-of-function research on any other pathogen, including other pandemic and potential pandemic pathogens. There currently is a policy that requires federal funding agencies to conduct a risk-benefit assessment before awarding the funding. However, that policy exists only on paper. The policy came into effect in 2018. Three projects were reviewed in 2018. None has been reviewed since. The policy has not been operationalized. It does not function because the funding agencies have chosen simply to nullify it. So that is where the state role becomes important. The bill that is before the Wisconsin Assembly and Wisconsin Senate has two parts. In the first part, it would require any lab working on a potential pandemic pathogen to notify the state government of its identity and its location. Currently, incredibly, that's information your state government doesn't have. That's information your local government doesn't have. That's information the first responders in your area do not have and therefore can't prepare for. So the first provision of the bill is a transparency provision that requires the labs to inform the state and local governments where they are and what pathogens they're working with, so first responders can prepare and medical providers can prepare. And then the second part, the second provision of the bill is to ban gain of function research. Very narrowly defined in a way that it likely covers at most one laboratory in the state of Wisconsin to ban that category of research in Wisconsin. And the reason we need this state legislation, and we need it not just in Wisconsin, we need it in 50 states. The reason we need this state legislation is that the federal government is broken. It's at an impasse. It can't move forward due to the partisan division in Washington.
So Bryce, what can the listeners, what can the audience do?
Well,
and what do you need the audience to do?
Well, call their representative, basically, their senator, their state senator and their state assembly member, and tell them that you are concerned about gain of function research. And I honestly that you would support this, the bill, Assembly Bill 413, and its companion bill in the Senate, which is Senate Bill 401. There's a public hearing from the Senate Health Committee that's occurring Thursday. I believe it starts at 10 a.m. It's an open public hearing, and I would welcome residents of Wisconsin to go and, you know, offer their thoughts on this issue at the Capitol. That's a great opportunity to speak on this. I think the fact that if enough residents speak up against this and understand that we're actually looking to protect the University of Wisconsin from, you know, a blunder. They made a mistake and they're doubling and tripling down on it. And we're crying out for help with the public to say, please help us in this regard. We do, you know, Biosafety Now has a petition that you can see on our website that you could sign to ban gain of function in all states. So I would encourage listeners to look at that and potentially sign that. Again, we are also, you know, we are a nonprofit, so we do accept donations. Right now, we use all the donations on advertising on social media for this issue. So, yeah.
Okay, and so Simon, you say what in closing?
Well, exactly the same. We have to be open, and we have to encourage listeners to get to their politicians, because ultimately that's the only way forward. And the more of your listeners do this, the better you can help us. In some ways, we are trying to protect University of Wisconsin from itself. And therefore, we're not trying to destroy the university. We're trying to actually help it.
Richard, you say what?
Public pays for this research. The public has a role in this research. The public is a stakeholder, a major stakeholder in this research. When researchers, for their narrow personal career interests and ego interests, pursue research that will help their career but place at risk 7.9 billion members of the global public, that is unacceptable. We need regulation. We need regulation with force of law that prevents that.
And Bryce, you say what in closing?
It should be bipartisan. And Earl, I spoke with you about this on the phone. I was saying that, man, this is one that we could work together and provide an example on how you could work together across the aisle, not just on this, but on like environmental safety, water safety. It's fundamentally about protecting public health. And I had said without getting into there's two sides of this. This is a justice issue, but it's also a personal freedom issue. So this is being brought up by Republicans. They view this as personal freedom, that, you know, scientists do not have the right to subject my body to experiments without my consent. But it's also public transparency. I think this is I love this because it's a unique opportunity to like actually work together on something of tremendous importance that benefits us all. And we're willing to come on at any time, day or night, and talk about this to anybody, because it's Richard is not, but I am. Simon, depending upon your time zone.
Well,
but I'd love it if you've given us this opportunity, Earl. I really appreciate it.
Well, gentlemen, we are honored. We are honored for Civic Media. We are honored for the Earl Ingram Show. We're honored, at 540 AM WAUK here in Waukesha. But thank you very much for taking this valuable time out of your busy days to help us. And Bryce, I will be in touch with you, and we'll work on doing this again.
Great.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Calvin.
Thank everybody who made the show.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you, Calvin, as well. Could not do it without you. Up next, Jane Matinere.
Matinere on air.
Matinere on air. All right. See you guys later.
In touch with the City of Lakes. In touch with you. This is Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. Hey, we're gonna have a good day.
Tune in to The Empowered Caregiver with me, Liza Hellenbrand, every Wednesday evening at 7.
On Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm